Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
All right, welcome in to another edition of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. And, you know, all season we've seen this Bears team just really resilient, gritty football team. You've been in every single game. We, you know, we talked about covering, not that that matters to you guys, but the goons on the morning show, we love to talk about that. Every game's been tight. Every game's been entertaining until this last week, coach. You go up against Montana State. That's a team that very well might win it all this year. They could very well do that. I could see that happening. They get up early, and there's still a part of me that's like, Coach, I've seen what you guys do. You know, even if it's a couple scores lead at half, you guys usually come back, make it interesting, at least this season. That was not the case this last weekend against Montana State, ultimately losing 55-7. Let's break into it, Coach. You know, it's kind of one of those things that felt like it just kind of kept spiraling. A couple back-breaking plays in that third quarter really kind of put you guys out of it.
Yeah, end of the second, early in the third. I mean, we're built around mental toughness. It's our foundational principle that I've talked about since day one of taking over the program. You know, our players hear all the time the mantra of talent can have a bad day, toughness never does. And quite frankly, we needed this. We needed this as a team. We needed this as a program. I needed this as a head coach because our mental toughness isn't complete. It's not built in a complete way. We are mentally prepared based on the results of this season. We are mentally prepared to play good defense and fight the whole game through as a whole team and stick together.
Yeah.
We are mentally prepared to be front runners and fight for a win. You saw that at Idaho. I mean, just the eruption of emotion and confidence when we jumped out in front of Idaho early. And really, we did the same at Houston Christian. The total yardage and first downs and execution of our offense and defense versus theirs was never even close. I mean, we outgained them. We doubled them up in total yardage and first downs and all this stuff. We threw two pick sixes, but we were mentally tough enough to overcome that because, again, we were, you know, we always had a lead, at least slightly. Clearly, what we are not built for is to hang in there together, show confidence, and pick each other up when we're down big. And I would say that, you know, that the difference in we got down big in the Davis game, but it was, at the critical moment where we needed to start getting stops and scoring, we did. And in the critical moments at the end of the second half, we go on the field on defense. It's 13-0. And this is what I pulled up when I showed our whole team. You know, I showed them the scoreboard shot. We've got 1:10 left. We've got the whole field at our back on defense. It's 13-0 against the second, third, fourth ranked team, whatever poll you're paying attention to in the country, and a team that beat us, you know, 55-17 last year and probably has a 30-1 overall Big Sky advantage on us, right? Yeah. It's like, so game is right there. We take a lot of pride in our 2-minute defense. We're man-to-man team. We like that challenge. We make it hard on quarterbacks. And they just marched it right down and got a touchdown on us. So we go into halftime at down 20-0. Not a great feeling, but still kind of there. We had started out on offense because they won the toss and Montana State won the toss and deferred. And so we had to go out and start out on defense in the second half. And they caught us in an aggressive blitz. They had only shown one snap of empty all year, no backs in the backfield. And so that aggressive blitz becomes even more aggressive when it's no backs in the backfield. And so they dialed up the perfect play at the perfect time. No way they could have scouted us or us scouting them in that moment because, you know, they hadn't shown empty. And so they wouldn't know what we would do against it. And for us, you know, that was a new pressure for us. And so, the learning lesson on that is, you know, we can't get into a game. Our fragile point as a team, from a mental toughness standpoint, is when it feels like our defense is faltering and the offense is not there to pick us up. So many of our losses over our first 2 years together were like that, where the defense could come out of the game and theoretically say, well, you know, physically we're right there. We got a bunch of stops. We got to get some help. And that's that's been a detriment to us, is not to be able to overcome that kind of thinking. And it showed up again this last Saturday. So huge, huge character check for us going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we're rounding out. We got a few games left. Another big opponent coming up. Another ranked team, you know, with Northern Arizona. Depending on which one you look at, but yeah, a lot of them have Northern Arizona right there. You always hear this. You hear complimentary football. You hear that. Whether you want to say it's a cliche, but it's a real thing. Where in what you're saying is that just did not take hold over the weekend. So much of what you guys have done. And you talk about those critical stops, end of the half touchdown by Montana State, start of the half. That's a lot of where we've seen this Bears team grow. And I love that you brought up those critical swing moments in a game. Is this going to be a blowout, or are we going to be right back in this thing? Sometimes it could come down to that one possession. And unfortunately, in this case, with those two possessions we're talking about, that was kind of what flipped this thing upside down.
Yeah. And it was, as it flipped, it was at that point headed toward a blowout, but it should have been more like a 38, you know, a point blowout. When we fumbled inside of our own 20 on the kickoff return, that's disaster right there from an emotional standpoint, a technical standpoint. And then the pick six, you know, that's how it really got out to the point where it looked like the games we've been blown out in our first and second year. Like, okay, where's the competitive Bears this mm-hmm. year in that game? And I think that was always going to be a game. You see it all the time. You know, nowadays you don't see a lot of heavyweight battles in the SEC or the Big Ten that are, you know, 9-6. These are, when you see that upset, when you see the kind of the upstart team supplant the number one team in the conference or whatever, or the top five team in the country, it's typically like a 38-35 game. You know, and we weren't built for that day. And when it got away from us, we, you know, kind of panicked, stretched at the wrong times, got conservative at the wrong times. And, you know, it ends up being 55-7. That's a real indictment on me as a head coach, because physically, we are not 48 points worse than that Montana State team we just played. And that's a real, indictment of the work that I need to do to get our team in the right place mentally to support each other through those tough moments and fight to the end.
Yeah, and you've proven that all year, that, you know, with these monster spreads, whatever, that you're not a 20-point difference. There's not a 20-point difference between a lot of ranked teams, a lot of great, really good teams in the Big Sky Conference. You guys have been in the gauntlet, and you've proven that. And that's what's cool to see, at least. Yeah, this is a rough one to take. But the fact that we can sit here on November 5th and say that's not the Bears team we've seen all year, again, is a positive step in that right direction. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it or excuse any kind of a loss, but again, we're talking about meaningful wins, meaningful losses, meaningful close games in November, and that is a positive step forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I've said it to our team many times, to have meaningful games in November, which I believe this was, and even the game before that, there was an outside shot at getting to the playoffs, and we haven't had that around here. You know, no. Where basketball season's getting started, and we call it crossover period, where now we're sharing a lot more of the meeting rooms and stuff around campus, and Smiley and I see each other in the hallway, we're comparing notes, where's the team at, who do you got this week, what's going on. You know, we've been largely toast the last couple of years, and that wasn't the case this year, and there was some excitement around that, but we needed this. I said it after the game. We needed it as a team to go from, in the past, losses like that have been, you know, the feeling has been just, we're not good enough as a team. I'm not good enough, and my teammates aren't good enough. Now I really can see it in the players' eyes. I think each guy is asking themselves, what could I have done better?
Yeah.
What could I have done better to make a difference? Because I think they know that the final score result of that game wasn't what it is. You look at, You know, the NFL is a great example, and I give these guys these examples all the time. You know, like in college football, because you only play a team once, you always are like, oh no, Montana State's 48 points better than us. In the NFL, teams get blown out all the time and then play the same team later in the season and beat them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of like mental and physical progress that our whole team, coaching staff included, needs to set out to make. We don't get to play Montana State again, but we have a lot to play for. We're playing against a top 25 team on the road in Northern Arizona. We still have a hope for a 6-win season. That's only been done twice in the whole, in this century.
Yeah.
That's only been done twice in the Division I history of UNC, right? And it's gotta be one game at a time. So we gotta focus on that too. But also every conference win is 4 more nominations that I get for all conference players. And so there are some real tangible things to play for. There's also a trophy that I'm largely unaware of. I've never seen between NAU and UNC. And so I got to find out more about that. And we got to go down there and play for that thing.
Yeah. I want to talk about that too. Cause I know that's kind of it's a rivalry that some people are wanting to really make. Cause rivalries, we love them in sports.
Yeah.
And maybe because the Bears haven't been so successful over the last, you know, since 2006 or whatever, we haven't really had a rivalry take hold. So I want to get to that trophy and talk a little bit about that. But you mentioned the blowouts. One of the themes of the show this week, we've talked about the last 2 weeks, is look what's going on with the Broncos and the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins beat the Broncos 70-20. In an NFL game, that is like unheard of, 70-20. Since that time, the Broncos turned it around. They're a playoff team. Miami just moved on from their general manager, and they're about 5-6 weeks away from firing their head coach. And two different teams go in a completely different trajectory. So that was fascinating to hear you kind of say, hey, blowouts happen. The Dolphins weren't 50 points better than the Broncos. They just beat them by 50 that game, put
never
them up against
NFL.
Never.
Yeah.
That never happens.
Yeah.
And in college, a lot of times you could say, you know, sometimes those happen. But I agree 100%. This team is not that far off. It's just those games happen where anything that could go wrong is going to go wrong. And sometimes you can overcome that and just find ways to make it close or whatever. But that was just not the case. But I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. You know, when we lost two major score games last year to UC Davis and Montana State. And I could honestly say that, you know, when we had come out of those games, I didn't feel like that if a couple of things would have gone different, it would have been a different game.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like if we play those guys, I'll play those guys again tomorrow, you know, and we'll have a better outcome. I 100% feel that way about this past game against Montana State. And that's not to take anything away from their coaches, players, the performance that they put on. But, you know, a couple of those results against us are the kind of things, okay, well, what if we get the tipped pass that turns into the pick six by a defensive tackle? You know, like, what if, like, they earned it, we didn't, right? But that's not the kind of thing that their defensive line coach says, hey, I'm drawing up this thing, and here's what we're going to do in this game, and want you to be ready for this moment. You know, it's just kind of, there's sometimes a luck of the draw, and when a team is already, you know, soundly beating you, to have a couple of those things not go our way. Luke Wooten, our kickoff return guy, he's back there for a reason. He's very sure-handed, spills it on the 18-yard line. You know, that's detriment to us.
It's kind of human nature. When things are looking like they're going in a negative way, a lot of times, most of the time, people press.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in the sales world, you're not getting sales, you start pressing, suddenly your process changes.
Yeah.
You're forceful, and you're like, you want the money now rather than the whole, hey, how are you? Let's get to know each other. Anything in life, we do tend to press. What you were kind of mentioning with that complimentary football side of things is when the offense isn't really there, you have a very good defense, but then suddenly you get a defense that goes, the only way we're going to do anything right now is if we have a field flipping play, something to change this. I have to make a play. Then suddenly guys are out of position, and it can be one inch, it can be one step, and you start to see that. It was that kind of the sense defensively, because we talked about that last season too, that maybe defensively you play so great, and then suddenly there'd be a tipping point where it's like, I have to make a play. And I suppose that's human nature, but you don't always want to see that.
Yeah, 100%. It's both sides of the ball. Defensively, it does show up as kind of we get into, and we even have it as part of our language. Me as a head coach talking to Preston Hadley, our defensive coordinator, you get to certain points of the game where we have to get into our play call sheet and what's called max aggression. Max aggression is, look, if they drive the field on us and score again, we're cooked. We're done. So, we've got to get a stop now, not only to get a stop, but to get a stop now so that they don't just milk the clock.
Yeah.
And so we were getting into that phase there where it's like max aggression. We're only going to get so many more possessions on offense to overcome the deficit that that already exists on the scoreboard. And so, yeah, that kind of press, that kind of pressure that can be put on the defense is both by design and, you know, we want the players to be able to play into that without feeling the pressure that we're feeling. Like, let us call the game in a way that's for max aggression. You guys don't start playing outside yourselves. And that's what, I think fans a lot of times, you know, media, critics, whatever might say, oh, they quit in that moment. To me, I've never been around football players that quit. Like, if anyone actually understood, like, how hard these guys have worked just to get where they're at, how much time they put on a game week, much less a whole off season, a year round, like there's no quit, you know. If they're quit, they're out of the game. But there's pressure, there's inappropriate response to pressure, there's playing outside of their 1/11th framework, and then it starts to look like, okay, this stuff is piling on. Offensively, it's the same. If you get in a position where you're pressing, you know, a lot of times people are kind of like, well, just chuck it deep or whatever. And you're like, yeah, but, you know, if you're in a situation where you've gone three and out and you haven't run much time off of the clock and now you're going to start throwing it deep and, okay, it's 7 seconds off the clock and you throw it deep again and another 6 seconds off the clock and now all of a sudden you've got a three and out where you only ran 28 seconds off the clock, your defense goes right back on the field with poor field position. Yeah, it sounds right, but it's the last thing that an offensive coordinator wants to do. And so I, as the head coach, have to say max aggression. We're done anyway. We're going to lose anyway. And I think we just, in those moments where we needed to get max aggression on offense and defense and the game was on the line or on the cusp of being, you know, to the point where we weren't going to make a comeback, we failed those moments.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, and I've never been one of those guys in all my life where I watch a game. I don't care the blowout. I've never said, oh, they quit on the coach.
Yeah.
I've seen, whether it's basketball, football, whatever, I've seen it where it looks like they ran out of gas, you know, just absolutely physically tired and I like what you said. It's not quitting. It's maybe the opposite of that. We're pushing so hard now that it looks like we're quitting, but actually we're pushing so hard we're just out of position, which that can be a problem too, but it's such a negative take, I think, to just point right at they quit. Guys that quit, usually, like you said, they're not in the game the rest of the way. You're not going to see them quitting in front of you.
Right. Yeah. That's not, there's no, fear of that. This team, me this year, there's too much leadership on the team. And we had some major problems on the sideline because there were some guys that were losing confidence, voicing that frustration in, themselves, their teammates, game plan. Other guys were dealing with it in their way. Like, if guys aren't on the field, a lot of times their mind starts to wander and all of a sudden they're laughing together about something. They haven't been on the field all day. They play a rather relatively small role. It doesn't hurt the same as the guy that's out there getting his butt kicked. And so there were some camaraderie problems on the sideline. And I dealt with that first on Monday when I met with the team. So we have, you know, we needed this. I said after the game, our team needed this, our coaching staff needed this. We didn't want it, but we needed it. Like, this told us something. And I even said our university needs this. Like, they're like, let's be real about what we're facing here. That team came from a long way away and put more fans in the stands than we did. Mm-hmm. We did. That's a sign of a long-term program that's winning and poured and reinvested resources and tried to keep up with their neighbor, Montana. When Montana built a stadium, Montana State built a stadium. When Montana raised their budget, Montana State raised their budget to match it. And now they're at the point where they're spending 3 and 4 times what the rest of the team in the league are spending. Wins, wins aren't bought by money, right? I'm not saying that. And that's something our players really understand and signed up for. It's like, we want to climb that hill and be the team that could do more with less. At the same time, I think, you know, on a long-term scale, it's really important that Northern Colorado have a strategy of how to position ourselves. And we're going through so much as a university right now. We're going through so much, strife and budgetary alignment measures that, you know, I don't know that's even possible right now. And it's not my job to really even look into that, right? Like, I don't have time for that. But, you know, I do think that I've been willing to put, you know, my legacy, my win-loss record on the line to do something amazing here. And I think that, I hope that our team can continue to improve and inspire everybody else around here to get on board with that, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Attendance at the game, you know, a $10 donation, you know, more resources directed into the athletic department or football in general. If that's, you know, possible at some point in the future, it doesn't seem very possible right now. But those are the kind of things that I think that game can teach us all some really important lessons about, you know, what a successful football program can do for a university.
Well, and it takes a lot of time to flip a program. But with the Bears, we've talked about this before. I mean, when I came up here, that was the year that transition was happening. Every year that you struggle from that point on, you're getting further and further behind. And then when you add in all the changes with college sports, the way it's gone the last 5-6 years, you feel even more behind. So when you're talking about Montana State, they're doing the whole anything you can do, I can do better. You're going to build new weight room. We're going to build a new weight room. You're going to put up a new state, whatever. You guys at this stage don't have that. It's pure baseline. So trying to just find ways to simply compete is difficult, but it's got to start somewhere. And, you know, no matter how the rest of this way goes, this does feel like that starting point finally for the Bears. And I know there was 2 other years where they won 6 games. Yeah. And I remember those years. It still just didn't have that same feel necessarily. I don't know why, but it just has that different feel of this could be that baseline that we're starting from.
Yeah. I think maybe, what I hope, as we build this thing over time, we can look back and see that it was a linear progression. You know, like we won more and more games each year, became more and more competitive, more consistent each year. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of the, I think what everyone is going to be looking for right now, just because we're so much into this season, it doesn't seem very linear. It's like,
yeah,
you guys were better 3 weeks ago than you are now. Well, yes, that could appear to be true, you know, yeah. There are circumstances that go into any game, and I want to give the boys a broader picture and really focus on, okay, like, let's take everything that just happened to us and learn from each moment, and then can we put a better product on the field this week against a very good NAU team, and we're on the road, and it's another team that, I mean, this team scheduled their homecoming for week 10, NAU did. Why? Does it count on the beating the Bears?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's who has a homecoming in week 10?
Yeah, that's insane.
Is that, like, doesn't even meet the definition of a homecoming game, right? They did it for a reason.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into that too, on that side of it, but quickly just want to go over the quarterback situation. And this is not on, you know, last week we talked about, Castelli, is he practicing? And that's kind of where we ended. Ultimately, he ended up playing a little bit, put him in different situations early, and then took over. What does that look like at this point? Is that an open competition, coach? How's Castelli feeling? What's your view on the quarterback situation right now?
Yeah, we're really thrust into kind of a designed minimal role for Peter. Peter's a complete quarterback. He's a dual threat quarterback, but he's a complete quarterback, and he can function in all aspects of the game: the drop back passing game, the rhythm passing game, the vertical passing game, and of course, you know, he's got elite speed and really good size and strength, so he can do all those things. But we only had him cleared for 8 days, and we don't have practice every one of those 8 days.
Yeah.
You know, so just over a week, we had him cleared for. We thought that the right strategy for that game would be to bring him in kind of a wildcat or run first type role, get the defensive aggressive, and then give Peter a chance to do what our team has been really built to do explosively. If we could get the defense out of kind of a too high shell and playing two guys over the top of Carver and Braden on the outside, and get them focused more on Peter, then allow Peter to get into the dropback passing game. Well, it didn't work. We couldn't quite get the, you know, Peter going in the Wildcat running game. And I think there's, you know, quite honestly, some frustration from him because he doesn't know. Dual threat quarterback wants to be seen as a running quarterback, right? Yeah. It's important that we define him how he is. But, you know, at the same time, while he and any quarterback is going to be supremely confident in their ability to go in and execute at a high level, regardless of repetitions, he's really short on repetitions over the last 2 months, right? And so, so we had a limited package for him. This week it's completely a 1-2 quarterback competition. Eric's getting more of the reps just because, you know, of kind of where those guys are at from an overall repetition standpoint. And I think Eric has performed to the point where, you know, he's we're not going to just give anybody their job back on a principle. It's possible in our program for an injured player to return and go right back into their starting lineup. But that would have probably a little more to do with how their backup was playing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Eric led us to some wins. Eric has done a great job with leadership. And so that's the Eric that Peter has to compete with right now. I believe in both of those guys and for our team to have the ability to go with the hot hand and prepare two very good quarterbacks and let them battle it out. That's going to bring out the best in both of them if they're game, you know, if they're gamers, if they're mentally up for those challenges. And I believe they are, or else we wouldn't do it this way. But yeah, we've told them the position is on the line, both during the practice week. Obviously the starter on a practice week, has a big advantage. They take more reps. But you know, theoretically, whoever's scoring in the game, and if the other guy's not, then that guy's our starter. And if it's just kind of, you know, if there's two quarterbacks and they're both going in there and performing the same, then we continue to have two quarterbacks, but they're both definitely going to have an opportunity, to lead and to play this week.
And I think that's fair. Cause Castelli was plan A. He goes down. Yeah. Gibson was not, we saw greatness, you know, in moments from Gibson, way different than what we saw last season.
Yeah.
So he comes in, like you said, leads some wins, keeps you guys close, puts up a lot of yards. He earned that right, and that's such a difficult spot to put in because clearly at the beginning of the season, Castelli was plan A. You made that decision. So, if Gibson had been darn near perfect, you know, every single game, then I don't think we'd be having this conversation right now. But
exactly.
There were moments where, okay, now Castelli's healthy. He was plan A for a reason, but we also want to give Gibson that fair shot here. So I honestly, I'm not sucking up to you. I think this is about the only way you could handle this with the quarterbacks right now.
You know, several weeks ago, you and I talked about Peter coming back and anyone who's listened to this, and anyone on our team knows how much confidence I have in Peter. I mean, he's here for a reason, and he was number one for a reason, right? Like, you can't, from a player's standpoint, you can't, think the coach is really smart when he picks you in the starting lineup and then think he's dumb when he picks somebody else, right? It's like you at some point, the player's got to step up and one of these guys needs to, you know, think about, okay, how can I be the best teammate I can be? But at the same time, how do I close the door on the other guy? I like to use analogies, and Peter and I were visiting yesterday and I kind of failed on my analogy because for some reason I was thinking he was a baseball player, when he was in his youth or something. I said, did you play baseball? He goes, no. And so I continued with the analogy anyway, because it's the only one I had. But, you know, I played baseball as kind of my third sport. It was, for me, it was soccer and football and which are in different seasons of the year. In Northern California, the weather allows for winter to be, you know, winter to be a soccer season. And so I played those three sports and baseball was kind of my third. And I was, the one I was third most talented or the least talented, is a better way to say it. And so, and I spent a lot of time on the bench, but in baseball, it's like Hall of Famers bat 300.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get a hit 7 out of 10 times you're up there if you're great at the sport.
Yeah.
And I would get in for like one at bat, you know, on a two or three game stretch and strike out or something. And it's like, well, yep, yep, there it is. You know, he just strikes out. He's not, you know,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I always felt like I'm not getting enough of a chance. And so I just wanted to acknowledge that, you know, to Peter and really any of our players who are kind of like competing on a limited, opportunity basis is, yeah, I mean, if you come in and hit a home run, you look amazing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everything changes. But if you come in and do, you know, just kind of according to the odds, sometimes it can feel really unfair. It is what it is, you know, recognize it and overcome it.
Coach, coming up, Northern Arizona, you have three games remaining. There's a lot right there because you said it. Was it 2012 or so the last time, 2014? I think it was 2014, last time the Bears won six games. That's still in front of you guys with three games remaining. It's not going to be easy with this next task, Northern Arizona. And you just mentioned, hey, they scheduled their homecoming way late into the season. That's because they 100% they believe yeah. this is a guaranteed win on homecoming. Talk to me about this rivalry, the trophy, what we want it to be, and how we could really move that needle in this rivalry. If the Bears go into Northern Arizona and get this win in a game they scheduled on purpose for a reason of, hey, we want to dominate on our homecoming.
Yeah. There are probably better people to speak to the rivalry. I'm 0-2 against them, and then yeah. here goes year three. I know the universities and the conference have agreed to set this up as a requested late season game. It sounds crazy, but there's a geographic proximity there. But we're really a geographic outlier in this conference. Everybody else has pretty natural geographic rivalries. Southern Utah is and now coming into the league. They're much closer to Northern Arizona, but they're also only 40 miles away from Utah Tech, who's yeah. also coming into the league. So, you know, I think the reason I bring that up is me as a head coach and our program, like kind of currently where it's at, we've got to play our way back into this actually being a rivalry. Mm-hmm. I don't think that NAU is, you know, in the off season, you know, breaking after their weight sessions on beat Northern Colorado. Like we're just not on that radar for them yet. And so we've got to continue to build and to have the type of confidence that we can go in there and play well and make it a game and therefore, you know, start to win some games and make it a rivalry. I think some past coaches have won those games, have been successful against Northern Arizona. And so that's an area where I would need to improve. You know, we talk a lot about my goals to improve this program. Well, in that way, we had some footing at some time in this program and we've lost some of that.
Talk to us about this Northern Arizona matchup. Obviously, they've been a good football team. Last time out, they lost a close game to Idaho. They've had kind of a, you know, great start to the season, but then they've hit a little bit of an up and down patch. But this is a good football team. And, you know, they're looking to finish strong here. They're sitting at 5-4, 2-3 in the conference. They still have a real shot to move up, you know, closer to at least the middle of the pack, maybe a little above that in the conference. So this is a huge game for them coming up.
Yeah, they're basically on a playoff run right now. If they win the rest of their games, they'll be in the playoffs. And play in, you know, so one loss dramatically changes their season at any point now or in the future, basically ends the goals that they had as a playoff team last year. Every team wants to kind of improve and get better from season to season. They were a playoff team last year that got, that exited in the first round. And so I know they had goals to get back. They've got a returning quarterback that's really one of the premier quarterbacks in the country. He does a lot of things well. He is a dual threat quarterback. But he's also very polished in the whole part of the game. We work hard to figure out tendencies on quarterbacks, even the way that they kind of stand and operate. And he's very well coached. They've got, an aggressive system of defense that has a lot of multiplicity. And so it can be difficult to kind of attack them. It's really the opposite of the team that we just faced. Montana State and really UC Davis before them, they will sit in the same zone coverage play after play after play after play. And Montana State particularly is just going to put it all in their defensive line. And they have an incredible defensive line, big, strong, fast all the way across the front. Northern Arizona is well built. They have good players, obviously, but they're also a more traditional system of defense in that you're going to see a lot of different things, different fronts, different coverages, and you got to be really prepared as an offense to maintain confidence in what we're doing through a lot of different looks. And then, offensively, they're built the same way. There's just a lot of diversity there, a lot of different formations, a lot of really good ball handlers. Colby Katz is on the outside, one of the best receivers in the league, statistically and ability-wise. A real challenge for us.
Yeah, it's just, it seems like a lot in this conference. There's a lot of quarterbacks that can also run the ball, that can just move around a lot.
That's football.
Yeah.
I mean, who's winning the NFL?
Yeah.
And that's not doing that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, from Mahomes to Jalen Hurts to now Josh Allen, you know, like, whoever's kind of stepping, Lamar Jackson, whoever's stepping into the top spots in the league, that's how they're doing it. And that's football now. There's just two, the defenses and the availability of film are too good. You have to be able to present a numbers advantage on all parts of the field. And so that's a critical part of moving forward. It's a critical part of us getting better as an offense is we've got to find the guy that understands that that's football. I mean, I think everybody in their mind wants to be Tom Brady.
Yeah.
There's nobody winning in football right now with Tom Brady. Like,
no,
and maybe that's why he's the GOAT. But like, if you just want to sit there and sit in the pocket and pass, okay, well, that's fine. I think, you know, if we can do that, we can do that, but it's becoming more and more difficult.
Why is that? You know, is it the speed of defenses now? Is it the smarts of defenses now? They can just take away a lot of those passes. DBs are staying with receivers better. Why? Cause I personally love it as a fan. I love seeing a quarterback take off and run.
Yeah.
But why do you think we're seeing that? We're seeing it nationally from top to bottom.
Right. Yeah, I think so. The athletes on defense are getting better. You know, there was a time in this sport, like even in my time growing up, if you were a really good young athlete, you played offense, you know, and then you went on as an offensive player. And the defensive guys were kind of the leftover guys. And it's just like anything. A free market has taken care of that. Some of the highest paid players in the game are now on defense because, you know, people whose livelihoods depend on winning have decided that they were going to invest in that. And so as those, you know, prices went up the media opportunities, the endorsement opportunities for those guys. Now guys grow up and aspire to be a corner, aspire to be a defensive end. And they play that from youth. And then more like when I was coming up, almost no high school was a one platoon system. You played offense and defense, no matter where you played high school football. And we had De La Salle in our league. Those guys played both ways. Everybody played both ways. Now it's rare to find a high school where guys are playing both ways.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they'll do it like Colorado did Travis Hunter. You kind of have a primary and then you come over here and run a package of plays. But it is most of the decent sized high schools. They are just offense or it's just defense.
It's an interesting balance though, too, with those quarterbacks because that can get abused pretty quickly where if you're not going through those progressions, you just take off, you look at one guy, you take off and run. That has to be a lot of, I would imagine, pretty one-on-one coaching too, yeah. Where you have the legs, you can use them. That's gonna gain us a lot of yards. It's gonna get you a lot of great stats. But as you do it more, then teams start to dial in on that. So you have to find a way to be a superior running back as a quarterback and a superior passer too to mix that all together for it all to work.
Right. And the right, I mean, if you study those guys that we're talking about, you know, you don't want your quarterback on designed runs, you know, 10 or 12 times a game. That's, you know, now you're getting into just kind of like option football where your quarterback is primarily a running back and you're putting them at risk of getting hurt. It's probably, you know, in terms of a designed run, it's probably 3 to 5 times a game that you're seeing the elite quarterbacks in the game now do it. And then, instead of trying to get to like a fifth progression or throw something into coverage or dirt the ball, throw it out of bounds on a pass play, they're getting through their reads a little more quickly and understanding, look, if the receivers all seem covered, there must be a pretty light rush box here.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, can I get some, instead of trying to get to my fifth progression and risking a sack, can I quickly get through my five progressions or first three and then add something to that. And so usually again, it's like you don't want your quarterback scrambling 19 times a game, you know,
yeah.
But 2 or 3 times a game for positive yardage can change you know, especially if it's instead of a couple of sacks or even worse, an interception, that completely changes how defenses have to account. And instead of dropping into pass first coverages, you got to balance your defense up on every play, because you need somebody to account for the quarterback as a runner in the run game, and you need somebody to account for the quarterback as a runner in the pass game. And that's essentially you're trying to play like 12 on 11 when you do that, as an offense.
When you're looking for that guy, you know, next year, 2 years down the road, obviously we talked about Castelli. He has that ability, but yeah, trying to kind of get that all to work together, is a work in progress, at least, you know, right now.
In coming back from injury.
He's always
been willing.
Right.
As has Eric. So I think it's coaching, it's emphasis, and getting, you know, Peter back fully healthy and confident. You know, that's, like I said, it was just, as we played this last game, he had only been, you know, only
right,
had a clear bill of health for 8 days. Yeah. Sorry.
But well, no, just going forward, you know, whether it's continuing to build what you have with Castelli, or whoever that next guy is, what are you looking for? Because you can see highlights of quarterbacks. Oh, there's a progression, right, wasn't open there, takes off, there's a 50-yard touchdown. Do you look at that kind of stuff, or do you look at how, because I think of like a guy like Lamar Jackson. He gets a lot of people like say, oh, he's just a running back that can throw. Yeah. I look at how he moves in the pocket.
Right.
I mean, that guy goes up and down, climbs it, but moves back, goes left, right. And he does enough of that movement where either something finally opens up downfield, or he's able to take off, and then there is a clear lane to run. Yeah. What is it that you're kind of glancing at when you're going into quarterbacks?
You just completely said it. I mean, it's multi-sport athlete. It's a guy that could play a different position. You think about the guys we came up with, like Joe Montana. Maybe I'm aging you a little bit.
No,
know these guys.
Yeah.
You talk about Joe Montana. Yeah. You talk about Brett Favre, even Tom Brady, Dan Marino. These guys could not play any other position on the field at the NFL level.
Right.
Now, you talk about Josh Allen. You talk about Patrick Mahomes. You talk about Jalen Hurts. Like, these guys can play other positions. Jalen Hurts is like one of the biggest squatters on team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And takes pride in that. So that's kind of what we're looking for. And we have that in Peter and in Eric Gibson. Like, these guys are good. They're good athletes. They could play other positions had they been on a different track in their youth or something like that, you know. And but they're quarterbacks, and they're capable of playing a complete game. And something we really need to, like, be able to establish more right now. We're not getting that, that complete game like some of the teams that are winning in our league right now are getting. And then as coaches, we gotta be super smart and strategic to make sure that we don't pivot too far in that direction. And now we're down to quarterback number 4 or 5 again.
Yeah, that's true. And that's also one of the big issues with that is a mobile quarterback can get hurt too.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, cause we always have that debate. Who's not the GOAT of football, but who's the GOAT of sports?
Yeah.
It's always interesting to throw Tom Brady into that, because you look at Jordan.
Yeah.
You look at Michael Jordan or whatever, and you go, man, that guy could probably play any position on the basketball floor. He also played baseball. He wasn't amazing, but he played at a high level.
Yeah.
I look at Tom Brady, I'm like, just quarterback, even though that's the most important position maybe in all of sports. But he's not very fast. He's not very quick. So it is always kind of a fun conversation to say, oh, yeah, he's the best pro athlete ever.
Yeah.
But really, he's just really good at throwing the ball.
Yeah, and to be able to do that, you know, to be kind of the last of his kind to do that like that. And we're not talking about ancient history here, right?
No.
Just playing the game a couple of years ago. But to be – I think to do that in that way, you've got to really be – so accurate and so on time and so smart and just be a complete, like the thing that he showed the most, he changed complete teams.
Yeah.
He remodeled teams after him and around himself. And, you know, credit the coaches who had him to allow that. You know, that's something we would want to be able to do too. We won a championship at Southern Utah with a similar type quarterback, a pocket passer, Brad Sorensen. He was drafted from SUU and the first player drafted in like 70 years from SUU, not 70 years, I think it was 40 years, and the first quarterback ever drafted from there. And, you know, at that time people were still running the quarterback a lot, but we saw in him, okay, you're a pocket passer, and can you do that at this high of a level? And then to adapt the offense around who we have—that's a critical part of our challenge as coaches.
Do you see that slowing down anytime soon? Where we go back to more of a pocket passer, where the running gets solved and these guys aren't? I mean, because you see this league kind of any league fluctuate. Do you think we'll ever go back to where, or maybe even it's like 50-50? Because it does feel like, college-wise and NFL, we're seeing more mobile quarterbacks than we are just pure pocket passers.
Yeah, I do, and the reason is the NFL owners and fans will kind of pine for those days, and as the dual quarterbacks get hurt in trying to kind of do this, and painting with a broad brush here, right? And right now, as coaches, we're trying to figure out, okay, how many times do you run them, you know?
Yeah.
But what happened, you know, when the NFL used to be a big all-run and play action deep game, then the NFL came in and changed the defensive pass interference rules.
Yep.
That opened it up for the pocket passer. Well, right now defenses have kind of adjusted and are playing within those rules, but making it really hard on a quarterback to just stand in the pocket. And so teams have found an advantage with a guy that can add a little something, a few scrambles a game, a few designed QB runs a game. And so when the owners get tired of that, or the fans get tired of that and pine for the old days of the pocket passer, you'll see some more rules come into play. Who knows what it'll be? It might be the allowance of some forward motion, right? Like that would change a lot, like the Canadian League has. And those things sounds like I'm coming from Mars right now.
But
the way they have changed the game over the years to always get the offense more involved, you see it in basketball as well, even things as simple as a 3-point shot. Owners and fans love offense.
Mm-hmm.
You see it if you go to a spring game. I've always been a defensive coach, right? But I always thought it was funny at BYU we would get we might have 30,000-40,000 fans at a spring game, and so you are aware of what people are cheering for. And we're playing a spring game, BYU against BYU, and every offensive play brings the fans out of their seats, and every good defensive play that's like. There's nothing. There's no clapping, no anything. So that's what fans are into. Certainly owners are going to be what fans are into, and that may change the game sometime soon.
When I came up to UNC, I took speech, and one of the speeches I did was talking about how, in my opinion, the NFL was ruining the sport because they want points and the fans want points. Ultimately, it's gonna not work, you know, and I talked about the changes defensively where you can't bump them anymore, and it's, you know, what did it used to be, Coach? It used to be you could bump them until the ball was in the air, right?
It's the current college rule.
Yeah. And then the NFL went to you can bump for about a couple of yards and then you got to let go.
Exactly.
I was really passionate about that. And that was one of my speeches on this. I was like, oh, it's going to ruin the NFL. Well, obviously I was wrong. The ratings have never been better.
Right.
But still, at some point, there's going to be people like us that are like, I want to see defense. I can watch any type of football, but sometimes you give me that 13-10 kind of game, 13-10 KFKA kind of game. That's where I really like. But I'm also cool seeing the shootouts too. That's fine.
You know how it goes. It's like on the coasts, the fans are clamoring for just more and more points. And then, you know, in the black and blue division of the NFL, they want that low scoring.
Yeah.
They want the number one defense. They appreciate that on a different level. It's really cool the way that, the U.S. is kind of, I think segmented that way. And you have teams and cultures that have been built over decades in a certain type of way. But yeah, in the end, the population centers on the coasts are probably going to kind of push the league in one direction.
And I'm the same way with basketball too. Like I want to see stops. I in the NBA, I don't want to see 130 to 120. It's disgusting to me. I hate it.
Yeah.
You know, if the Nuggets or the Bears or whatever are on the positive side of that, that's awesome. But I'd much rather see like a 90-80 kind of game.
And that was the prevailing feeling in the 80s, right?
The
league then changed the rules to allow for some more zone defense, and now you have lower scoring games. But like when I was coming up in the 80s, you got the Celtics and the Lakers and the Pistons, and that's what you would see is 130 to 140 scores, and it was crazy.
It is interesting to kind of go into that with you too, because you see trends in sports, and right now that trend is telling us that you're better off if you can get a quarterback that can throw but can run around a little bit too, and it's fascinating to kind of get into that conversation.
For a young guy like you to talk to an old guy like me, bring up what it looked like in the 80s, that's a little embarrassing.
Well, I mean, when I was growing up, it was when I was like understanding what I was watching, it was toward the end of John Elway's career.
Yeah.
But when he would take off and run, which he didn't do a whole lot when I was watching at the end, but when he had the famous helicopter run, that was the coolest thing ever. Now you're like, Lamar, what are you doing, man? Yeah. Do not do that. Because if you're hurt, then if you're gone, this thing's over.
Right.
But at that point, that was like the coolest thing ever. And now we go the opposite. We see a quarterback do that and we flip out.
Right. Yeah. That's true. The game goes in cycles. There's no question about it.
Coach, appreciate you going there with me, man. And first off, like, for you committing to do this podcast is awesome. But you do this win or lose, you know. It's really, I just think it's really fun to be able to sit and talk, whether it's a big win, whether it's a big loss, whether it's a bad loss. You coming in here to do this with us and spend some time at KFKA, man, we just really appreciate it. And then to get your insight on other stuff, too. That's what fascinates me as well. I love talking the games, but being able to pick your brain, because you've seen it all. You've seen a lot. Not to say you're old, but you've been around. And I love to pick your brain about that stuff, too.
Well, certainly, I think the game teaches lessons for our players and ourselves and hardships, and we're coming through a tough time right now. I expect us to really learn from the results of these past 3 weeks. We're on a 3-game losing streak. There was a time around here when a 3-game losing streak would have seemed like nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's really painful. It's really and there's a. You know, there are some moments of doubt and frustration that we've got to get turned really quickly for a tough opponent this week.
Yeah, 3 games remaining. Big one against Northern Arizona. Go get them this week, Coach, and we'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thank you, Brady.
All right, Football 52, find the podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, or 1310kfka.com.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Northern Colorado football is geared up and ready for their next home game. Be a part of the action and help the Bears defend the dip. Join UNC in celebrating Senior Day on November 22nd as the Bears face Portland State. Purchase tickets online by visiting uncbears.com/tickets. Remember, this is Bear Country. Go Bears!